Chairman Crawford, Ranking Member Walls, and members of the subcommittee, thank you for the opportunity to testify on behalf of the Agriculture and Food Policy Center at Texas A&M as you focus on the growing farm financial pressure gripping our nation. For over 30 years, we have worked with agriculture committees in both the U.S. Senate and House of Representatives, providing members and committee staff objective research regarding the potential farm-level effects of agricultural policy changes. Working closely with commercial farmers has provided our group with a unique perspective on agricultural policy. In 1983, we began collecting information from panels of 4 to 6 farmers or ranchers that make up what we call representative farms, located in the primary production regions of the United States for most of the major ag commodities. The results I'm going to discuss today focus on the financial condition at the end of 2016 and again at the end of 2020 for 63 representative crop farms located in 20 states. And figure one of my testimony has their locations if you're interested. The analysis utilizes FAPRI's January baseline commodity price projections. And we have a color coding system that I'm going to discuss. We have developed this to provide a quick way of showing how the farms are doing, much like your stoplight here in front of me. A green indication is a farm that only has a 25% chance of not cash flowing or a 25% chance of losing their real equity. A yellow farm is indicated by a farm that has between 25 and 50% chance of losing and not cash flowing and the same percentage for losing their real wealth. A red farm, as we have indicated here, has a greater than 50% chance of not cash flowing at the end of 2016 or 2020 and a greater than 50% chance of losing their equity. The figures 2 through 5 provide a listing of the farms characterized as either feed grain and oilseed, wheat, cotton, or rice. And I just mentioned the characterization is based on the whatever they have 50% or greater of in terms of their gross receipts. And as prices change over time, some of these farms that are characterized as like a cotton farm might actually be doing better because of the grains they've switched to than cotton, and we'll talk about that later, I'm sure. So getting to the results, these results are the worst for feed grains and oilseed farms as well as wheat and cotton farms that we've ever had in most of my career, at least since the early 90s and probably before that. Specifically, 11 of 23 feed grain farms are projected to end the period in poor financial conditions, so more than half. 6 of 11 wheat farms are projected to end the period in poor financial condition, again, more than half. 8 of 15 cotton farms, and the only bright spot are only 4 of 14 rice farms are expected to end the period in 2020 in the red or poor condition. These results already include any projected ARC and PLC payment support that would be triggered by low prices or low incomes in future years. We contact our individual representative farm members when we need their feedback on important events or issues. For this hearing, we specifically asked them about the financial situation in their area, how they were dealing with low prices, and overall observations of the current financial environment. I've got 4 points I'd like to make. 1, obtaining financing is much harder. Although all of our producers were financed this year, a number of them had to go bank to bank and put up a lot more collateral than they've ever had to in their careers. Most feel that this year is going to be a bad crop year and the situation for financing next year is going to be nearly impossible. 2, almost everyone said they were putting off machinery updates due to lean times. A number reported that hired laborers and they're going to reduce hired labor and reduce the amount of purchase inputs, which also runs counter to trying to make the yield that they're trying to do. Cash rents have come down a little, but nowhere near the amount that commodity prices have fallen, and that is due largely in part to multi-year lease arrangements, and some landlords just will not budge. And the last is probably the most concerning. Most of them are concerned about the future, for themselves, but also for young farmers who don't tend to have the equity in their operations that older farmers would have. So I'm going to summarize my comments with 3 points I'd like to make. First, the low prices being experienced by most of our covered commodities are well below the cost of production for almost all of our representative farms. These farms have been shown to represent producers with well below average cost of production. So if our farms are hurting, the average farm, or worse than average farm in this country, is in terrible shape. And we've just shown that. Second, the current poor situation on farms across the country would be considerably worse if not for the safety net provided by both Title I commodity programs and policies and federal crop insurance. There are some who say that commodity policies are more important than crop insurance or vice versa. I don't believe it's time to pick and choose a winner there. I think they're both incredibly important. For lenders tend to view crop insurance as being more important because the insurance guarantee is bankable, meaning it is something on which they can base a loan. On the other hand, producers see the commodity assistance as the only chance they have of coming close to breaking even in a low-price environment. And finally, in my opinion, the interest groups that continue to call for changes that would negatively impact these two key policy tools clearly either have no idea how difficult the financial situation is across agriculture, or they simply do not care. Farmers in this country deserve better than to continually be threatened with changes that I consider a dismantling of the safety net. Mr. Chairman, that completes my statement.
Thank you, Dr. Outlaw. I would remind members that they will be recognized for questioning in order of seniority for members who were here at the start of the hearing. After that, members will be recognized in order of arrival, and appreciate the members' understanding. With that, I'll recognize myself for 5 minutes. Let me start in general question here. What do you say to those who look at the situation in agriculture and wonder why don't farmers just plant or not plant a certain crop if they don't think they'll make money doing it? And I'll ask Dr. Outlaw first, because you've done extensive research on this. If you want to start us off.
Sure. But basically, the producer situation we have right now is they're trying to plant the crop they're going to make the least loss at. Said differently, they're also trying to plant the crop that they might be able to get an above-average yield at, which would reduce their costs and make them where they could come closer to breaking even. But the big question you asked is specifically, why don't they just stop? And the reality is that very few farms across this country don't have loans that they've taken out on equipment, land. These investments are quite large. In order to try to service that debt, they have to try to make some money back. And so we have people trying to give it a go. I'm not going to sit here and say that every farmer in the United States is in dire straits, but I'm telling you that's the trend. And to answer your question, basically, we have producers trying to do something that might actually, either through a higher than average yield or something to happen in the price on the commodity side, to make money. They don't want to not farm.
Right.